You are listening to Animated Indulgence, the explicit and opinionated podcast where grown men talk about cartoons. Each episode, we'll pick apart, analyze, and dissect an animated series or movie.
Warning, there will be spoilers, even potentially for shows and movies that are not the topic at hand.
We may watch cartoons, but we don't watch our language. Discretion is advised. Welcome, listeners, to episode 3 of Animated Indulgence, where grown men watch cartoons. Tonight we are going to be discussing Attack on Titan, specifically the first season. As of this recording, the second season is about, I think, just coming out now. So, yeah, I am Airhammer.
I'm Deus.
I'm Majoric.
Okay. All right. Well, let's get right into the spoiler-free pitch. For those that have heard of Attack on Titan and for some reason not heard of Attack on Titan, let's talk about this in a way that they can approach it. The show is an action show. It's also got a lot of drama to it. You can expect gore and psychological horror. Despite the gore and psychological horror, don't expect any real jump scares or traditional horror elements.
Yeah, while it's gory, it's not like disgustingly so. People die, people bleed, but it's not like overly focused on it. It's there, but it's not over the top. That's one thing I was kind of, I didn't really mention it, but I was kind of slightly worried about, because I know there are some animes out there like that, but yeah, it's not overly violent, or it's not overly, it is violent, it's not overly gory. It's a show that has a lot bigger scope, which isn't a really bad thing. It's like it focuses more on like civilization and humanity as a whole. I mean, there are main characters, but yeah, they're not really the main focus, at least not in my opinion. So there's that idea too. That's something to note going into it.
I think that's a good way to put it. It follows main characters and their small part of the story, but the setting takes the lead here. I suppose we should explain what a Titan is and the basic setting and the progression of the story. A Titan is a giant humanoid beast that runs primarily on instinct that devours humans. Only humans, and not because they are hungry, not to feed. They're solar powered. They just love the taste of people. Can't get enough of them. Setting is the last bastion of humanity behind a series of great walls that protect people from these Titans, where they can actually have farmland and houses and sleep without worried about, you know, being crushed and such. The plot follows some soldier students, some new trainees after a great catastrophe, and their part in trying to combat and even reclaim land from the Titans as they struggle against them.
Yeah, it's an interesting show. It makes really good use of this is a little something I want to note that I found really interesting, and I think that people are looking for something interesting to look at might find interesting, is it makes really good use of CG. It's another thing I would like to throw out there as a pitch. If you're looking for something that's interesting to look at, that's one thing I'd like to, you know, pitch.
Well, make no mistake, that is a 2D animated show. It just uses CG for props, backgrounds, and other such things really well. It
camera
integrates it well.
And such.
Oh yes,
it's really. Looks good. So yeah,
I'll get into that quite a bit at the end of this episode when we get into the art of the show. But it is a very pretty show. If you're looking for a visual feast, this is a good one. I think
do you have any
a big part of the show
to pitch the show, Airhammer.
Just that it looks great. The characters are all very different. There's a lot of butts in this show.
That's true. The Titans are all naked.
If you're into men's butts, this is the show for you.
Especially fat guy ass. If you're into naked fat dude's butts, this is a show. That's one of the things I would like to bring up is the Titans themselves. They are human in appearance, as I said, but they are an unfathomable force of nature. They are grotesque, they are quirky, and almost magical. The show borders on fantasy with some of their abilities. So
yeah, more than that.
Don't think they're sexy.
More than borders.
Yeah.
I won't spoil it, like, but they're more than boils. Borders.
Tiptoes into, then.
Yeah.
Yeah, we gave you basically a vague description. These Titans will range anywhere from about 15 feet upwards of probably 500 feet in height. Most of them will look just like average men with varying hair on their head. So you might see one that looks like Santa Claus or another guy that just kind of looks like, I don't know, one of the Beatles for all I know. And some of them just look kind of plain. Others have a smile or a grin on their face that would rival the Joker. Like, these things look sinister.
Yeah. It's definitely Don't want to get too much into it in the spoiler-free stuff.
So. Yeah.
Well, we do want to give them a good idea.
I know.
I think one of the biggest things is early on you guys compared the Titans to zombies, and they really are in the same formula as zombies, but they're not the same experience, especially not for the human characters. If you are a zombie fan and completely out of zombie media, this might scratch a few of your itches, but you'll be left a bit puzzled by it. Because it doesn't follow all the same stock
It's a zombie story with no zombie tropes. Like, about the only tropey zombie-like thing about them is they're mindless. And I agree. It's very zombie-like without any of the major zombie tropes. It's not like survival, like people are hiding away in buildings, shit. Like, I mean, they are hiding away, but like, it's not like. It's not anything you. It's not DayZ. It's not World War Z. It's not Zombieland. It's not a modern setting. That's another thing too. The setting. Yeah.
Yeah.
The setting puts it in a very different place. It's a zombie movie. If the zombies were giant and set in like medieval Europe.
More industrial.
Yeah, steampunk Europe.
Yeah. Another interesting quirk of the show is it's almost like Lost or what's another one of those shows that gives you limited information piecemeal?
Heroes.
Yes, very much like Lost and Heroes, where it will give you only the information the characters have and leave you to piece together the setting, the history, the story. It gives you a lot of mystery while leading you along a separate story. So it's really fun to fan theory around it if you can avoid spoilers.
And going slightly back into like how it has a bigger scope, expect time skips of sorts. Like sometimes they're small, sometimes like boom, it's the end of the day. But like there's no slice of life in this show.
It's paced quite quickly to get the plot across. And
boom, 3 years have passed. Boom, a month has passed. Boom, like this thing they've been planning for a week is they're. Suddenly on it. It's not done bad either.
I won't say that you get no time with the characters either. It's just that it's usually the time you get with the characters is while they're doing, thinking, or talking about something else that is important. There's never just idle time for the sake of idle time.
But yeah, I don't know what else we should go into in the pitch.
I guess since we mentioned butts, there are a lot of naked butts, but this show has remarkably little fan service for a modern anime to the point where the women are all in uniform, none of them are sexualized. There's not even a Hot Springs episode.
Nope. Yep, no obligatory Hot Spring. Also noting that the Titans do not have genitalia. These things are basically shells. So you're going to see man ass, but nothing else.
Yeah. That's about as much as we can get away with talking about the spoiler-free section, because the way the show unravels itself, talking about anything in particular would be a spoiler, because it's going to come along in a way that's very natural to the progression of the story. So just trust us in saying that everything in this show is top quality. It's a very high-budget show, and I think most people would find it enjoyable if they're into an action drama with horror elements.
Yeah, it's I definitely would recommend someone giving it a shot if you're looking for something like more, I guess, adult is a way to put it. It's gory. It's more. It's based on, you know, humanity and war and military discipline. It's like it's a little bit more adult than things we've covered on the show so far. And yeah, I'd recommend it. Just give it a shot.
I think my best recommendation is if you are mature enough for Beavis and Butthead without imitating them, but want something serious rather than comedic, that's about the level of maturity that I would recommend. I think a teenager could watch this long as they know the difference between fantasy and reality. With that, how about we go on to expectations?
Warning, the spoiler-free section is now over. Continue listening at your own risk. Okay. Airhammer and I recorded our expectations before we watched anything, so we'll go flashback to that now, I guess.
So I've seen this show before. I'm very familiar with it. I know what I'm getting into. How do you guys feel going in? What are your expectations?
I really don't know anything about the show. I mean, I know some of the character design concepts, like the monsters are big, fleshy, like humans that are attacking these people for some reason. That's about all I know about it. That's literally all I know. I don't know any of the characters' names. I don't know any of actually, if there are main characters, for all I know, the show could, every episode could change and have a different cast. You know, for some reason, I have no idea. So I'm expecting it's going to be I have some info from what you've told me. It's going to be a lot more. It's a lot more actiony. It's a bit gory, more maybe. It's more violent. It's the word I'm looking for, I guess. Not gory. But yeah, I really don't have that much to expect because I don't know. I guess is what I'm trying to say. Don't know enough. Okay, Airhammer, so what are your expectations of the show?
I'm really not sure what to make out of it. I mean, all I've seen right now is the 20-minute episode that Team Four Star did, which I think is an abridged version of the first four episodes of the main program. It's just bizarre to me. I don't even understand it from that. It's like, what the fuck are these things? They eat people. They destroy towns. It's weird. I don't even get it from the abridged version I saw. I'm just guessing that there's a lot of deaths and a lot of awkward shit that happens in this anime. What could an expectation be just from what I've seen? I have no idea.
We're on the same
They're fighting giants. Fighting giants. That's as far as I know.
Yeah, and we're on the same page. Yeah. Me and you have pretty much the exact same knowledge going in. I have a little bit less than you, but yeah.
One snippet of a clip that I saw that one of these giants infiltrates one of the towns disguised as a human. That's about as far as I know. I'm trying to understand their intelligence because when they are crashing through a city, they don't look like they're very smart. Then they must have something that I'm unaware of.
I'm curious to see. I didn't realize they were unintelligent. Anyway, yeah, I'm curious to see what it is.
So like I just thought they were mindless brutes going through and eating people.
Yeah, I guess that might be it. We'll see. I guess it lived up to my expectations of violence, and like I already said, it's somewhat in a spoiler-free pitch that I expected it to be a bit more gory and gross, but it's done. I mean, you don't really, tactfully isn't the right word, because it's still gory and gross, but it's not really over the top, like, fucking bad. But yeah, other than that, I really didn't go into it expecting much. I knew there was monsters. It's a little bit more towards the end. More and more stuff is being added to the backstory of the monsters and why they're there. And now, like, why are people transforming into them, or what, you know, whatever the hell they're doing. It's a lot more in depth to them. It's a little bit more than I expected. I thought I'd get something more like maybe Walking Dead, but with gigantic monsters, gigantic zombies. You know, more survival, fighting them off, trying to find places safe to stay type stuff. But maybe that's. I didn't get that, and yeah, it works. It's good. What about you, Airhammer? Did it live up to your expectations?
From what little I saw prior to us watching, yeah, I guess it was about the same. I wasn't expecting, like, there are certain aspects of the show that will stick out. We've already addressed, like, how the Titans look. There are a lot of beady eyes in this show. everyone has this look like their eyes are about to pop out of their head all the time.
Well, let me tell you guys how I became a fan of the show.
Okay, yeah.
A friend and I were talking about anime a couple years ago when this show came out, and I was complaining that a lot of modern anime was very fan servicey, and he brought up this new show and said, look, why don't we just watch this one? This one looks very non-fan servicey. We've been looking for something to watch together. So for the first time in years, I sat down and watched a Japanese sub as it was released. I was blown away. I walked into this not knowing the first thing about the show, just checking out the first episode, and he and I both agreed that we were watching something special by the time the end of the first episode had passed. And since then, I've continued to watch it. I've watched it in both Japanese and English, which is, I normally don't watch anything outside of my native language. It was a treat to watch again with you guys, by the way. Thank you for that.
Yeah.
And that was fun. It was a bonding experience for a friend and I who have very different tastes in anime, but when you get into something of extraordinarily high quality, I feel like there's still just some wiggle room for people with very different tastes to bond over something, and that was my experience with it. Before I got into it, it was before it got super popular, before we knew anything about it. I guess at some point someone put a lot of money behind the project, so they were expecting it to be this big. At the same time, he and I had no expectations of it. We didn't know what we were getting into, and we were both pleasantly surprised for one reason or another.
I enjoyed it. Let's move on, though. Oh, let's talk about the intro theme.
Are you prey? No, we are hunters!
Oh, man, it's... The intro theme's... The first intro is amazing. I usually don't care for stuff that's I can't understand because it's another language, but we have to mention this parody thing that we saw of it. It's forever tainted the first intro theme for all of us, basically. Are you having sex with the bees and the eagles? It's so good.
See, the funny part about that
we'll link to the parody thing about the bees and the eagles for sure.
We will definitely.
And along with the regular intro like we usually do. Unlike any of the other shows we've reviewed so far, this is the first show that we've done that's actually changed intro. Like, in a meaningful way. Like, Steven Universe changed intro, but it was just basically, you know, the background, the art, right? But the song's still exactly the same. Nothing changed that way. And what we watched of Sailor Moon had no intro change, but this one did. I just wanted to note that.
Not just audio, but also visuals. Dramatically, it pertains to what's going on in the current state of the story, and I think it's normal for an anime to change intro mid-season. It is not so normal for it to be so pertinent to what you see on screen without spoiling much. In fact, I'm not sure it spoils anything unless you look very deep into it. The fact that the intro is so popular, it's become almost a meme, is... something that speaks for it.
That's something powerful. We'll talk about later with this show. But the second intro, I don't get me wrong, I really like the first intro. I like obviously the meme like theme song at addition to it, and it's okay. But I to be honest, I think I'm gonna go on a branch here or go out against the grain here, and I actually kind of like the second one more. I like the second intro because it really fits with the theme of the show. It's like it feels. Not quite marching band, but like military anthem-like.
Definitely. Yes, Anthem is one of the words I use to describe it.
I know the first song is good, and I like the responses and the fan-created content to come of it, but I like the second theme more.
Yeah, I like both. The second one definitely had an Anthem theme to it. The first one is definitely more dark and gritty in that it's... you know, you're looking at the horror aspect of the show within the first intro. Then as the season begins to pick up around episode 14 is when they change it up, and you're seeing maybe the more heroic side as things are building toward the fact that they can actually counter the Titans in some way, yet they are still, like, underwhelmed and can easily be defeated.
I'd like to point out that both themes, the songs, are played to, not rapidly, but montage-y. It's not rapid montage, but it is a montage of different scenes from the show. And like Deus pointed out there, it's not spoilery. Like, it's just generic scenes, but it gives a sense of what the show's gonna be like. The intros are good. I like them.
I would say the first intro is powerful, it's high tempo, it's dramatic, it's large, and it fits the Titans. You are listening to the sounds of good men and women descending into the pits of hell to fight these things. The second one starts out with that military anthem and turns into a rock opera very quickly. I wish Freddie Mercury were alive to record his own lyrics to that song, because I feel like he could. The visuals in both are magnificent. I think the visuals in the second opening are actually better than the first, but I prefer the audio from the first opening. I'd also like to take a brief look at the endings. They are not nearly as important or dramatic, but they're very different from one another. The first ending is pertinent to Mikasa's character. It is a reflection of her development and her subconscious, and it uses some experimental animation that I really liked. The second ending is almost straight out of Full Metal Alchemist Brotherhood. It feels like it fits in that vein very, very well. I also like how the endings and beginnings both help build up the character personalities from what little we see of them. Just that little bit to reinforce their characters helps a lot, in my opinion.
Yeah. And this transitions really well into the next one we're going to talk about, the next part we're going to talk about, sound and music. First of all, the sound effects are amazing. Like, the sound design itself, like, outside of music, like, when you hear horses going by, when you hear, like, the miscellaneous chatter of people in the background, when you hear just stuff happening, the sound effects of their little harness thing firing, like the sound effects are great. I'd like to point that out. That's something a lot of people overlook, and I think it's done well, and it's because of the type of show this is, it fits in really well, and it's important. So yeah, the sound effects are good. The music, I like the music. I like the music that's instrumental. I don't mind songs with lyrics added to them while in shows and stuff, but like, it's better in my opinion over something dramatic happening that doesn't need dialogue. There's a few times in this show that they have music with lyrics going at the same time characters are talking, and it's really distracting to me. It might just be a me thing, but it's something that I'd point out. It's very distracting to me. What do you guys think?
I agree with all the above. The sound effects fit naturally. You can hear cloth ruffling when someone turns their head, which is something you almost never hear in a show. The sound direction is out of this world good. I personally love the soundtrack, both vocal and the score. I think the score is amazing. And I do agree that it's a bit disappointing that the vocal tracks are over top people talking, but it doesn't bother me as much. It's not distracting. I do think it's a little disappointing that the lyrics are not necessarily connected to what you see on screen. It's as if they paid for some really awesome music to be made, and it didn't 100% fit what they needed, but they didn't want to just not use it.
Songs themselves are good. I just disagree with how they're used in some ways.
Yeah. The tone and tempo of the music all fits together wonderfully, by the way. Nothing feels out of place. It's just the idea that these vocal tracks were probably paid for, and they didn't want to waste them. So they used them in place that a non-vocal part of the score may have been better, just to emphasize the action. And it works to a degree. When nobody's talking, it's freaking amazing.
What do you think, Airhammer?
you get so wrapped up in the show that I've actually forgotten about what most of the music even sounds like. The sound effects, as you already pointed out, are amazing. I can remember more about the intro themes than I can the music in the show, which I'm not sure if it's probably a bad thing, but...
I don't know. It says something about the music. The music is... None of it was bad, right? And it adds something to the show in such a way that, like... You barely even that's the way a lot of like ambient or background music should be. It's not something super memorable. It's not a theme. It's not a you know, meant to be sticking in your head. It's not meant to be something like that. It's just meant to be something there to help, you know, not have silence.
Yeah, and it fits, does it really well, and
it sounds
well.
Good. Yeah, it fits the style really well. I think sometimes with stuff like this, having slightly forgettable music, It is not a bad thing, because it's not meant to, like, you're supposed to be focusing on the characters and the stuff going on and the, you know, the actions going on. I don't think the music's bad. I don't think it's, you know, super fantastic either, but I think it does its job.
I think it also speaks to how it's not overused. You don't hear the same click over and over again to the point where you do remember it, which is
AKA
great.
Sailor Moon.
Yeah.
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 So I guess we'll move on to localization, which I know nothing about, to be honest. And Deus, I know you said you watch both. I did bring up at one point, and I wanted to bring this up here again and ask you, like, while we're recording, do you think the way the characters talk in the show, they're very formal, like they all, do you think that's more of a concept from do you think that's more from the fact of where it's set or the localization?
I think it's probably twofold. I think part of it is that it's a military setting. Most of the characters we follow are military soldiers and probably have certain formalized speech. I think also it's a convention of modern anime to translate first very strictly and then loosen it up after the fact. I don't know exactly the process, but it feels like it was loosened up from a strict translation. I don't think it's bad in any way, but I can definitely agree that it's a bit stiff. There's no slang used, I'll put it that way. I won't say that anyone's a proper gentleman, but at the same time, I can definitely see where you're coming from. I think it's got several sources, and if it means that everyone can understand the characters clearly and the characters are not portrayed incorrectly, I'm okay with it. One of the things I would like to bring up on a different note is that in the translations between fans' translations, manga, anime, there are multiple terms for the same thing. For instance, in the show we saw ODM gear, omnidirectional maneuver gear. Mm-hmm. In some interpretations it's called 3D maneuver gear. Also, there's almost a joke about the Survey Corps being the Scout Regiment, Recon Corps, etc. And
a lot of different names.
Yeah, a lot of different names. But most of the terms are universal. I don't think there's any, other than maybe just spelling, even the fan translations have all the names solidly in there. They're all the same.
Which
is remarkable. It's a very solidified show, and one of the causes for the names being all the same I will get to later. The English cast performs really well too. What do you guys think about the acting?
I like it that they all fit the characters. You know, there's no one that really sticks out as like, what the hell, that voice doesn't fit, or what the hell, that you know, that type of accent doesn't really fit with everything else. There's no fucking Molly. There's no Molly. they all fit. I don't think any the main casts, they're good. They're not super super memorable. I don't think, just after watching the show, would recognize any of them anything else at the point. Yeah, it's not bad. I think it was definitely done well, in that the characters fit. You don't ever get any, like, oh my god, why is that kind of manly voice coming from that feminine character? You don't get, you know, the character, it just all fits. So I guess what I'm saying. What about you, Aramer?
Yeah, the actors fit their characters well. I guess the only thing that I would sometimes notice is that obviously you will have Japanese dialogue where the show is wrapped around how the animation is supposed to fit the Japanese dialogue originally, so English dialogue will be altered and sometimes extended or shortened or whatever it has to do to fit how the character's mouth is moving. So sometimes a line might come out a little awkward as a result.
Yeah, especially during the moving the lip flaps. I can definitely see that sometimes. On that note, though, I think the English voice for Armin fits better than the Japanese voice. The Japanese cast has a lady, an actress playing Armin, and she's a wonderful actress, but it gives Armin a girl's voice, or maybe a young boy's voice. She's wonderful at what she does, and she performs well, but having a male voice play a male character fits a lot better for someone who's in his teens. That just works better for me. Also, Levi is Matt fucking Mercer, and I love him as a voice actor.
Overall, the localization is pretty good.
The localization is so good that we have nothing to talk about, really.
Yeah.
There's no real things to point out. It's just so good, so beyond passable, that there's no low points, no high points. It's just consistently 8 out of 10 all the way through. No mistakes.
Yeah, it's pretty solid. So yeah, I guess we'll move on. What about the theme and plot? What do you guys... Who wants to lead this one?
Well, our theme is... what were we calling it? Steampunk what?
Well, it's more like a setting. Like, theme is like...
Yeah.
It's very bleak. The show's very bleak in a lot of ways. People die. Lots of them. And people kill themselves.
Yeah.
And people have post-traumatic stress disorder. It's realistic in that, like, it's hopeless. Like, a lot of these people are, like, an absolute terror and fear all their lives that they're going to just get eaten by these gigantic naked men monsters. Like, it's a very kind of bleak show at times. There's signs of hope when they finally think they could fight back and stuff. But at the same time, there is a full-on scene where a character just fucking is sitting there fixing a gun, and everyone's sitting there thinking that he's getting ready to go out and fight. But no, he just picks up the gun and blows out his head. It's not a happy show, I guess.
No, not at all. Like, one of my notes here is, arms are the best gifts. And this is all based on one of the very first scenes of the first episode where one of the groups has just returned from out in the field, and there are so many dead, and everyone in the town is just wondering what the hell happened. And a mother approaches one of the soldiers and asks about her son, and he just hands her his arm that's all wrapped up. It's like, hello, okay, here you go, a present.
It definitely sets the theme for the show.
Happy Mother's Day. By the way, his service will be held at noon tomorrow. You're welcome to be there. We're going to have a proper military funeral, burial at Wall.
Okay. What do you think about the theme, Diz?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Fear and horror are definitely strong points, and I think that scene that you mentioned where the terrified soldier commits suicide rather than being eaten by the Titans is definitely one of the strong points, one of the most memorable scenes in the show.
Absolutely. If anyone told me to put that is, I've dealt with people who are suicidal before. Like home really right. It was a really strong scene. And if someone told me to name one scene in this show off the bat, it would probably be that one. To be honest, like
And he's not most... really crying or broken out. He is serene.
No, he's fucking happy. Like, no, he gets the gun finally together and it clicks together, and you could visibly see he's happy that it's like, oh, I'm happy I'm going to die now. It is a very strong scene.
I would say that the fear and horror are very strong, but I also think that it pits fear and horror versus trust and discipline. I think that's the real duality of the show, because if you think about one of the other more powerful scenes when Armin convinces the soldiers to trust Eren and not kill him for what he's done, for what he's become, that's really the soldiers' fear versus trusting Armin. That's them losing their discipline. Even if you think about Armin and his salute in his final moments, that's him showing military discipline in the face of absolute horror and fear. That's a really good just snapshot of the psychology of the show, what the themes are about. if you think about the Titans as this visceral implication of nature, they're familiar because they're human, because they're around all the time, they're cruel, they're uncompromising, they cannot be reasoned with, they are a force of nature, without a doubt. The horrors that people face are very much like the ones we have to face, but amplified. You know, that they're facts of life, but blown up to a scale of 100. We mentioned earlier that there's some hints of mystery and intrigue, and there's almost like a conspiracy theory thing going on behind the scenes.
The cult. The cult's a big one.
Among other things, yeah.
That stupid cult, man, is always there. I'm a very big fucking tinfoil hat on the cult. There's got to be something big on the show. I haven't watched it further than season one yet, so I don't know for sure. But, man, if they're not important some way, I'm going to be very disappointed. They're fucking Illuminati. Anyway,
yeah, I guess I had to expand on my expectations from earlier so that I still have more. Like, there are so many questions to still be asked after this first season.
Why is there a Titan in the wall? That's the big
Why
one.
Is there a Titan in the wall?
I could answer, but I'd have to kill you.
I wanted to point out again that I really, one of the things I respect most about this show, and there's a couple movies and shows I really respect when they do this, it doesn't feel the need to always be happy. It is a bleak show. Bad shit happens. There's like this one scene where like the main character wants to break orders and turn into his, spoiler alert, he could transform into a Titan. But he wants to break orders and turn into a Titan to save his buddies. And they tell him, no, don't do it, but trust us, don't do it, we'll make it out, right? And it makes it look like it's going to be a happy ending. Oh, you trusted us, we're alive. And then promptly 5 minutes later, they all fucking die. It's...
Oh, yeah.
Not a happy show, and I like that about... That's probably, you know, it's a weird thing to like, but, like, there's other things out there. Like, the movie The Mist does not have a good happy ending, but I love the ending.
Optimism is very frequently crushed under heel. Optimism is not allowed to thrive. At the same time, despair in the complete face of just absolute horror, you will die miserably, is also defied miraculously. That guy that was in the building who committed suicide, the two people next to him ended up alive because of miraculous things. He would have lived had he not committed suicide. So there's this idea that nothing can ever be super good, but the worst of the worst, it refuses to let the bottom drop out that many times.
I didn't even notice that the people next to him lived. That's interesting. I also want to say that the show shows post-traumatic stress pretty good. Like, people are freaking out when shit, you know, after the fact, like, oh my god, we just survived that, what the hell? You know, they freak out about it. It's very accurately shown where, like, people aren't just going to fucking calm down and take a chill pill after fighting for their life. People are flipping out.
Yeah, like, there's a lot of good impact on how the characters are built up and motivated. You'll see how they start out younger and they go into the training and they got drill sergeants down their throat and they're trying to just be stripped down so they can get ready for the horrors of what's outside, and they think they're ready. They get all done up with their gear, and the moment they're out there and they're confronting something that's 50 feet taller than they are completely frozen and in fear.
With that, I think that brings another interesting point of the plot, is that it's surprisingly positive to the military for a story from Japan. I don't know how many Japanese narratives put military in a positive light. This one does, and it's also very negative towards government. Like, the government is clearly vilified. There's a class struggle, there's corruption, all this stuff happens, but it does show the military in a reasonably good light.
Yeah, I was thinking that as well. Like, there's definitely a lot of people in the military that are kind of off, like the slacker people, inner city guards, and some of the higher ups, like the soldiers, like selling shit that they selling their supplies to people for side money. There's definitely corruption and stuff in the military, but for the most part, it's presented as protectors, you know, not something that they needed. It's definitely interesting. I agree with you there. It's definitely also anti-government. There's a lot of like bitching and moaning at panels like, oh, this is what we spend our tax money on, and it's very interesting how it goes both ways. The plot itself, I mentioned this earlier in the spoiler-free section, but the plot itself is a very much grander scale. We do have main characters, but they're not really focused on in a lot of ways. Like, it's kind of zoomed back to focus on the humanity as a whole instead of major characters, and I like that. It's a nice change from stuff I usually watch.
Yeah, there were a lot of parts that kind of irked me in a certain way. You look at how the society is brought up. You have these creatures that are coming at you for over a century, and based on their limitations, their technology has gotten them to where their biggest weapon is still a cannon. And for their technology, you have this gear that, as we like to describe it, lets them fly around like Spider-Man. But then, I don't know, there were other things like, we've already compared this show to, say, zombies. So I'll give an example as Land of the Dead. You have the zombies that are pretty much isolated to the outskirts of the various towns, whereas the city has been blockaded, and you've got how many people that are inside what they call Fiddler's Green, and they still try to have a normal life where they can still go shopping, spend money, and all this stuff. But you're basically at the apocalypse. It's somewhat of the same thing here, whereas I try to understand, why are you still dealing with money?
They were so protected for a while. Maybe when we started the show, the attacks started becoming more frequent, and that's, you know, where we start. Maybe they've had a calm period long enough to get, you know, try and live in that type of world.
I suppose, yeah. It just seems bizarre to me in a sense that when you could die at any moment due to these things, and yet you're still struggling over, oh, I can't buy this particular item or
I think
that
it actually,
particular item.
A way to prove my point is that a lot of the, I talked about it a little bit earlier, I mentioned it, like a lot of the people are unhappy with how the tax money is being spent with the guards outside,
yeah,
because they're not used to Titans being around. They don't see Titans because maybe they've had that long lull, like a lifetime long lull of not being attacked. I don't know. What do you say, Deus? You probably know more.
Yeah, it's clearly implied that people don't see Titans inside the wall. The walls are safe. What happened in the first episode was clearly the first time anything such as that has happened, and it was a huge blow to everyone's mentality. Like, they just didn't expect it. They're not used to it. Which also brings me to something else I noticed about the walls. The walls are a huge symbol in this show. They are such a focal point. And to
Very
me,
much.
They represent security versus the freedom that they have to give up. Aaron's first thought is that a home is a pen and humanity is cattle. He sees the walls as caging him in. At the same time, these normal people day to day for 100 years have seen the wall as security. They're not free to go outside the walls, but they haven't been eaten. They can set up these mundane little things. They can worry about money and taxes and shopping. So
yeah,
it's a very interesting dynamic that the walls are such a symbol and mean so many different things to so many different people. It's pretty remarkable to me that such an interesting concept can be set up in episode one.
And they're also the gods of the crazy cult.
Hey, don't you be talking about my walls. Praise the walls.
I'm not gonna let that cult thing go. I'm very curious. I'm almost tempted to have you spoil me, but I don't want you to.
I am willing to after the episode. I know we said in an earlier section that we can spoil things beyond the show. I don't really want to spoil things beyond season one because that's not even animated as of the recording. I feel a bit off spoiling a manga of something that will be in the future for the listeners. So I'm going to hold off on that. You guys are safe.
Oh, yeah, definitely not on the air. But I guess we'll move right along.
There's one more thing I'd like to say. Trust is a really big part of this show. The more I thought about it, the more I realized. I mentioned earlier Armin's speech is the only solution, but trust is also vilified. As you said earlier, Aaron trusted his squad to defend him, and they died. The last battle of humanity is at the Trost region, and Trost is a homophone for trust.
I think
if Trost falls, if Trost were to fall, humanity tears itself apart.
Trust is displayed very accurately in this show, in that, yes, you need to trust people sometimes to fucking get through something that, you know, you can't deal with yourself. You need to trust them, and yes, a lot of the times it will work in your favor, and it'll be a good thing that you did, but also, sometimes you throw that trust out there and it bites you in the ass.
Yeah, it's on both sides of the coin. It's
I really like that. That's a good point. Depiction. I'm glad you brought that up. I really like that point a lot. Because I definitely see that in the show now that you brought it up.
Absolutely. Such an interesting way that it's presented as well.
So, do you want to move on to characters, or?
Oh, absolutely. Lead us off.
I've probably already been hinted at somewhat. I'm not a big fan of the way characters are in the show. I mean, I understand it, because they're trying to do something different, but, like, I think the major drawback to the show, in my opinion, is how static the characters are. They don't change much. Each character is given their personality from when they're introduced, and they stick to that. It's just what they are for the rest of the show. And I don't think it's horrible, and it fits what they're trying to do in the show. It's just, I really like a character-driven show. You know, obviously, I really enjoyed Steven Universe. One of the things I loved most about Sailor Moon was character-driven. I think that holds the show back a little bit. It's just my minor thought, it's just my thought on it. What about you guys?
For me, the characters do grow, especially early on, from the first few episodes when they are children, growing into teenagers, into cadets, into full trainees. There's a lot of character growth. I meant
their personalities.
Yeah, the personalities are kind of stuck in place. I think, at least past a certain point in the story, the challenge for them isn't growing into a better person, but to be themselves in spite of the horror. It's enough of growth just to not have PTSD. Because the horror, the psychological trauma, there's so much dread and so much spectacle when it finally hits that it would be very difficult not to fall prey to that, not to become something less than yourself. One thing I wish I would have mentioned during the theme part is that the horror is not some creepy crawly hiding under your bed. It's not something in the dark of night. Almost all the horror is done under a blue sky. It is out in the open, in the daylight. You see it. There is nothing hidden about it. It is just the spectacle of it. The characters do falter under seeing that quite frequently. I think they're all moderately fleshed out, but their motives are what's really, really well done. Every character has a very well presented motive.
Yeah, but I would argue, and like I said, I agree that it fits the type of show they're trying to make, but I would argue that in some ways each character is primarily defined by their motive. Eren wants to, like, kill all Titans and get out of being a cage in the wall, and his adoptive sister chick wants to protect him, and, you know, the other girl just wants to eat all the bread. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. It's just I don't think it's a super negative shit thing. It's just something that doesn't quite fit my taste. I don't think it's bad. I just think it doesn't fit my palate, if you will.
Yeah, I guess I could say the same. I suppose I have more to say about the characters individually. So, yeah, what do we call the guys who guard the walls? The roses?
The garrison. Yeah, they garrison? Have roses on there. They have roses on their uniform. That's what their badge is.
Yeah, as we learn, like, early on, a lot of them are just really fucking lazy, which I guess is what leads to the opening attack. It's like, okay, we haven't seen Titans in forever. You don't have to worry about it. And then all of a sudden, oh, we're under attack, and we're going to look at them for the first time in our lives, and we're frozen solid. Bye. We're not going to help you anymore. Like that's what brings us to our individual characters. You got Eren, who is kind of a hothead. He wants to get out there into battle because he wants to get beyond the walls. But then as soon as this attack happens, his life is just basically crushed. His house is destroyed, his mother's pinned under, and we've got one of these, you know, these soldiers coming to help him, and he's fucking useless. He just freezes right out of terror, and she winds up dying as a result, but then again, she wanted them to get away anyway, so, yeah, and, like,
while
the entire experience.
While we're talking about his mother's tragic death, I want to bring up something. I'm sure you were just about to go here.
Maybe.
And just in case you weren't, I think pretty much 90% of Eren's main character growth happens in like the first episode. And then he sticks to being a, you know, I must kill all Titans, get revenge type thing. And, you know, he gets a little bit of character growth with the whole trust, but then all my friends died thing at the end. But, like, the majority of his character growth is that first episode, and then he kind of sticks. I guess that's what...
He just starts out as a hothead that often gets punched. He really likes to try and get his opinion across, and he eventually evolves based on all of this traumatizing... It's just crazy what this kid's been through, and it turns him into a psychotic, basically. His tone of voice, the way he thinks, the way his face looks on that, he wants to kill every single Titan in his path. It's crazy.
Yeah, he's bonkers. I would say that you guys are correct. I think character building is short, but I would also say it's potent. For them to build that much character in just a handful of episodes, even just the first episode, is pretty amazing. I wish they would develop a bit more, but I can kind of see where the show was going and keeping them static, because if they keep shifting, it would be harder to keep up with so many characters and much harder to keep up with the progress of the story. I also feel like Aaron is built up a bit too much early on, but as the show progresses, it eases off and becomes a lot less obnoxious about presenting him as the main character. There's a certain scene that just sort of pulls back from that completely and reveals, yeah, this is a team show. Aaron is the center point of that team, but we're going to show a lot of other people.
It's like Goku in Dragon Ball.
I would say it's done a lot better than that. Goku
But you know what I mean. It's like,
I would say it's the opposite of that, actually. Imagine Goku in later parts of Dragon Ball, where he is the only possible solution to the big bad. We know it's going to come down to that from 30 episodes before. In Attack on Titan, it starts looking like Eren will be the big solution to every big bad, and then we start seeing Mikasa do things. We start seeing Armin do things. We start seeing Jean become important.
Yeah, my main thought was that he's the main character. He's the one the vast majority of stuff's going to follow, but there are other characters around.
I would say so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Without a doubt, he's the main character.
While we're on characters, one note thing I noted here was that I think one of the things that makes the characters not have much time to get their own little development or their own little growth is that there's a lot of them. The show throws out like 16 plus like characters that are relevant to what's going on in a lot of ways, because they're part of the teams that are going out to do, you know, expeditions beyond the wall and shit, and they're around for some of the final showdowns and stuff. And they throw out like 16 plus characters like this that you're supposed to remember in only 25 episodes. Maybe that's part of the issue for me. I don't know, but it's just something I wanted to note.
Yeah, most of them. Yeah, I can't really remember the name too half the time. I think Sasha was the only other one that really to me outside of, say, maybe Annie, and then I forget what his name is. He's kind of bald or has, you know, really like thin hair.
He's like
he was described like as Nazi having a
head shave.
Yeah, he was described as have one sandwich less of a picnic or something.
is Connie Springer.
I
think you've brought up two things. One, Sasha has the best first impression of the entire show. She might have the best first impression that we're going to see for a long time, actually.
Sandwich
guys.
Girl?
Potato girl.
Yep.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Always eating stuff.
Potatoes.
Yeah. She is amazing. And that also sort of leads into how they described Connie, how they showed Sasha. This is not a comedy show at all, but it does have moments of comedy. It's really truthful, real comedy. And I think that really, along with failure, shows to highlight the characters way more than their successes. The characters are defined more by what they don't accomplish and by the funny moments they're in, rather than what they actually do and what they want to do.
Yeah, it's all in all, the human characters are interesting, but we can't forget the Titans as characters, because oh my fucking god, some of them are absolutely like creepy, terrifying. Some of them are kind of cheesy, weird. Like the big what is it called? The armored one? Or I can't remember. The big gigantic Titan that like looks like its skin is missing, so it's just like muscles and shit.
Colossal.
It's the Colossal. It's kind of the Colossal one's not that creepy or scary to me, but like there's some other ones that have some really terrifyingly weird faces. Some of them are really sillily done, like you would see them on some weird meme face or meme like online thing, but like other ones are like really kind of eerily creepy, and then there's other ones that are just wacky, like running around flailing his arms like from like it's weird. It's there's another one that crawls around on the ground like bug like. There's like they're all very unique. They're all very weird. Some of them are genuinely creepy.
Yeah, as I put it, Fabulous Titan is fabulous. Occasionally you'll see a really sassy one.
We'll link to a video relating to it. It's hilarious. You'll want to watch it, I'm sure.
And the main thing with some of the characters here is the cockiness. You do not want to keep your eye off the prize here. That's a big thing that you'll see with a mistake with a lot of these characters in that they will start to have a small victory, or they will be chatting after they've done something. You have got to be looking directly in front of you, because you're going to have a Titan popping out of anywhere and just grabbing you out of the air.
Yeah, they're quick sons of bitches. They're like, gigantic, and a lot of them are fat, but holy fuck, they're quick sons of bitches.
Seriously, watch where the fuck you're going.
Another thing I found about that is the Titans are very humorous at times, very horrifying at times, but it takes this human element, these realistic faces, these realistic figures, and twist them into something dehumanized. In fact, lot of the psychology also dehumanizes the characters. At the end, Armin says that you have to be willing to let go of your humanity in order to protect it. You know, that's something Commander Ervin says as well, that you have to be able to sacrifice your humanity in order to protect it. So dehumanization is definitely a big part of the visual and psychological.
Kind of leading on that is the Titans are almost exclusively done in CG, and the CG is, at least to my eye, it's not bad in any way, and it doesn't like take away from the show. It doesn't stand out if you're not paying attention to it. It fits in really well, but the CG, I think it might be a accidental like theming or accidental thing they might have done, ends up being like, okay, all the main characters, all the humans, all the heroes, all the human people are, have this one type of style of how they're drawn, and all the Titans have like a different style to contrast them, and it adds to it. It's good. I like it.
That's a really good observation.
Yeah, it adds to it, and a lot of it's just really well done. I really like the Titans. Are creepy. They're good. They're good at being eerie, creepy, gross. Some of them, if they weren't trying to eat you, you'd still want to look away from, because they're just creepy. They're just like the way they behave, right? Like the way they move, the way they grin. They're creepy. I think that's really well done.
Yeah, absolutely. It's so well done. Shall we move on to setting then?
Sure. This has already been kind of... I've already brought up
some of my thoughts on it.
I'll let someone else lead on this one.
What I want to say first and foremost is that this setting is mostly a European industrial area city with almost an entirely Anglo population, which is almost unheard of for an anime. All these people have, you know, blonde or brown hair. They're white folks. They're European. They're French, German, without any doubt.
Something on this that I want to note, it really reminds me of how its closest comparison is Full Metal Alchemist, that I know of anyway. Full Metal Alchemist does a very similar thing. It's all European-esque set, but it's a Japanese-made thing. It gives off vibes of that if you're familiar with it. At least that's what it does for me. Anyway, sorry.
No, you are completely correct. I get that vibe as well. They're not... I wouldn't call them in the same vein, but they have a lot of the same design philosophy behind them.
Yeah.
I've already mentioned how the walls are symbolic of surrendered freedom and also symbolic of faith, especially faith in the predecessor's decisions. There's an entire cult built around it, which apparently are the Illuminati, according to Mojo.
Hey, they're always there in the background.
Praise the wall.
Praise the wall.
Yeah, the setting as a whole, have trouble understanding the scope of the show sometimes, how far outside the wall do they have to go before Titans are just wandering around? I think a lot of this information either passed by me at some point, or it's contained in something I want to talk about later, or the little bumpers. I don't know. But, like, the scale of the setting is sometimes hard for me to comprehend. Like, how much space do they have in between the walls for farmland and stuff like that? The setting is very important, but also for me, I didn't really get a really big grasp on the scales of things. So I guess that's one thing I wanted to point out. I like the setting. I think it's a nice mix-up of just not set in Japan. I like that. It's obviously... It's not set on Earth. I don't know. We haven't really talked about where in the world the city is positioned. I don't know if that's ever relevant or not. But yeah.
Oh, we never really get a glimpse outside the walls. So all we know is that it's a vaguely European landscape.
But yeah, the setting's interesting. It's left very mysterious, I guess, maybe on purposely. Maybe where they are on a map might be relevant at some point, because a lot of, who knows?
Yeah, the where and the when, it's trivial. It's kind of like with Dragon Ball, where it's not your typical kind of setting in your year. You might be hearing someone say, the year is age 764 or something like that. You get the same thing here in Attack on Titan. It's not like modern, current day type of thing.
Yeah,
so it's not like we say that this is happening in the 1700s or something like that. No, this is happening in a completely different continuity.
Yeah. But we don't know much about it at all.
Yeah, like for all we know, that Earth map looks nothing like ours.
For all we know, that Earth map is just a gigantic world with no oceans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we don't know anything. It's definitely, should be noted that the setting is a mystery. And maybe that becomes relevant later, I don't know. Deus probably does, but that's beyond what is mentioned in the first season.
A lot of what you guys have been asking is answered later on. Some things are still up in the air, but it's narrowing at this point.
Okay. That's interesting to know. Did you have anything else to say about setting?
I think the society itself, you guys touched on how odd the society is. I think the society as it's presented is this exclusive dystopian paradise. It's heavily classist, where people, where the interior walls are the upper crust, and the further out you go, the lower class you are. You saw a purge of humanity where, 20% of humanity, which I'm almost assured that all of them were refugees from the outer wall trying to come in, were all sacrificed because of strain on food production. There's a lot of classist commentary in this. It's the society is really interesting. It's got heavy tones of that. It's also got subtle tones of Nazi ideology, not in a positive way. It's just almost like this weird, it's got some 1984 in it, how humanity has this common enemy that won't go away, that binds society together. And then it's really interesting, the psychology that goes into this society, because there's nothing I've seen quite like it that explores it the same way. It actually takes all these terrible ideas from fiction, puts it into a society, and then drops good people into a very bad situation.
Yeah, it's all done very interesting with, though. Yeah, it very much does not always portray the government as a good guy. In fact, it's kind of anti-government, and it's
very much
the setting. Classism fits into that, for sure.
Yeah. Well, I think the society is such a hallmark of the setting itself. The way humans live, the way they manage to go on for 100 years or so with limited development that's such a weird hallmark of this setting. It all fits together really well. That's another beautiful part, how all these elements fit together well. You're not ever left wondering, wait a minute, that's stupid, why don't they just do that? At no point during this show, watching it twice, have I thought, well, that's just dumb. They have this at their disposal, why don't they do it?
Yeah.
And that's so hard to pull off, so I have the utmost respect for the writer to put that together.
You're right. It all fits together well, like setting, characters, theme and plot. It all meshes well, really well. There's nothing really that stands out. It's not like weird. It'd be really weird to set something happy in this world, right? If you took all the events that happened and dropped took them out and tried to set a happy themed story, in this world where fucking giant monsters are running around eating, or if you tried to set it in this world with the music they use, or the way art is presented, it wouldn't fit. They all fit well together. I think that's a good point. Move on to art. Art and visual design, which we talked about some with how the Titans are portrayed in CG, and there's a lot of other moving parts in the background. Like, there's a particular, I tend to remember, like, maybe it's in the intro or something, but there's like a big gear that's moving at some point, and it's all done CG, and it looks good. I like it. They pay a really good attention to detail on making sure everyone has a badge on them, right? Mm-hmm. It hammers home. Everyone has a uniform. Everyone's in the military, and everyone has their group that they're part of in the military, and the badges are consistent. There's you never see, random guy with different thing on him. They're always part of the one with the roses on it, the one with the unicorn on it, the crossed swords, or what was the last one?
The wings of freedom, man.
The wings, yeah. I don't know why the wings are kind of the least memorable one to me for some reason. But anyway, they pay good attention to making sure everyone has their badge on them, and it, shows what part group they're in, what faction, if you will. It's neat. I like it. The art and character design for the human characters, not Titans. The Titans are obviously designed to be really creepy and weird, which I've already gone into, but, like, the art, there's a lot of thick black outlines to a lot of the way the art is drawn, which, otherwise, it's kind of, in my eyes, I don't watch enough anime, I guess, to differentiate. To me, it's just kind of generic anime.
I would say, yeah, it's different. I don't see those outlines in many shows. And in this case, it's not just a consistently thick outline. They're also tapered. So the weight of the outline is different at certain parts of the drawing, which I don't think I've ever seen that before.
The inking, I guess, if you will. If you follow comic books, like, the inking is like the outlines and drawing of the art itself, and then someone else does coloring for it. The inking, if you will, is very interesting. It almost feels comic book-esque with the way it's drawn.
Well, with that said, I would also like to mention how, despite how unrealistic the outlines look, all the designs are very realistic. They're very grounded. It's not fantasy in any way. It wants you to feel like this could be a real place. Nobody's got blue hair.
Yeah, oh, there's that and it doesn't follow the super anime tropes of dyed bright hair and all the gear they use. They use actual realistic functioning looking cannons. They use, while I don't know how well this thing would work in real life, they use something at least somewhat plausible to do their Spider-Maning around the world.
I'm pretty sure you would get whiplash, but I'm also pretty sure you could swing from one building to another before your back broke. You would hurt yourself.
Don't do it. Disclaimer. Don't be Spider-Man. We do not endorse this. No, but yeah, it looks very feasible, at least. And it's
Spider-Man.
Only if your Uncle Ben dies. Anyway. Then you have my permission to be Spider-Man. Anyway.
Yeah, the art is just amazing. I think early on when we were watching it, I compared it to High School of the Dead, which we might watch sometime in the future. I have to go back, of course, to see if anyone or the same studio is responsible for both shows, but I did get the sense of the same style for both. Attack on Titan just looked great.
Yeah, it looks
everything top to bottom.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It's got such a great use of color and light. There's so many times where the sun and blue sky are used as ways to offset a very brown or drab scene.
Yeah, there's some really, really good like landscape shots where like you have these like beautiful giant like open fields because they're outside the walls doing scouting stuff, right? And you have these soldiers running through them, and it looks really good. And all of a sudden, a giant fucking monster-ass titan comes out and eats someone, and it's like very well cool set next to each other, like these beautiful landscapes with like these giant monsters just killing people. It's the art of the background is done really well.
Yeah, especially with that dark tone, like you said, the tone of the show is almost always fear or something horrific happening, but the visuals are never really obscured unless it's for a dramatic effect. They don't use light against you. As I said before, all the horror is out in the open, and I think a lot of the action and almost everything is very visible. It's very easy to read visually. Another thing that I found very easy to read was something I don't notice a lot in animation, mostly because it's probably too expensive, but my God, the shots, the cinematography, the framing, everything was so good. The parts where they had slow motion, the parts where they had motion blur, the angles all the scenes were cut at, the cuts, everything is freaking amazing in this.
There's a few places where you could, in my opinion, you can see where they kind of made a decision to go to a certain style to cut down on costs, though. This needs to be mentioned at some point, or I will mention it now, I guess.
I know.
There's a couple scenes where everything is kind of like slideshowy. Like they'll show like every 15 seconds worth of shot of them like progressing down the hall while they're talking and have a conversation. It doesn't feel bad because it's not anything exciting going on. They're just walking, but you could definitely tell they made that decision because let's not waste money animating people walking down a hall. At least that's what my logic would be. Like,
You're completely right. And it's,
they're taking that and it to choreographing the gigantic weird fights where if they're slinging around, where you have five Spider-Men flying around. It should be noted. It's not done badly. In an ideal world, they would have a unlimited fun and it would have animated that scene. But if we got the badass fight scene of the quality that we did because they slacked there, I'm all for it.
Yeah, and as you said, it does present a bit of a stylistic choice. They definitely didn't just show you a freeze frame for no reason. They did it in a different art style every time it happened.
And this is something I want to talk about later at some point on this podcast, when we get to Ruby, how studios and creators cutting back on stuff to save money in a way can actually give a decent style. It's something I definitely want to talk about at some point on this show, because Ruby did something very similar. They changed it up later, but I really liked what was done with that. Anyway.
If we don't have anything else to go on, I would just like to reiterate how damn good the shots were. Just watch the opening and watch the sequence where you see, I believe it's Mikasa swinging and flipping through the air with that awesome CG city. You can see the blend of 2D and 3D. You can see the animation. Everything is absolutely top-notch. You can see her framed very well. You can see the animation follow her. The camera moves. She moves. It is outstanding. So good.
Yeah, it's all... The art's very well done. Pretty much everything is well done. This show has a lot of polish. Up next, what can the show be compared to? What did it take inspirations from? What is its influences? I'm going to start out and say, I really don't know at all. Zombies? It is definitely zombie-inspired, but other than that, if not inspired, has a lot of in common with, as we've mentioned multiple times.
Full Metal Alchemist? Mentioned Spider-Man?
Yeah, I know, but those might be just things they're similar to, not necessarily inspired by. But it is worth noting, I guess. Comparisons, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, comparisons.
I think I recall saying at one point in episode 10, I had made a comparison to Transformers for part of an episode. It's just after Aaron has emerged from his Titan body, and they're all surrounded. We have this this captain who is basically wide-eyed, terrified, and he looks crazy. That's the short of it. He's shouting at them, and he gives Aaron one, what you would think is a simple question: are you a human or are you a Titan? And as soon as I could see how he reacted to Aaron's answer, my first thought is, this is Quintessa. I have this captain who is basically a Quintesson judge. Every soldier around him is a Sharktacon, and here is Aaron playing the role of, well, he kind of has a mixed role. The fact that he can transform into something a lot bigger than himself kind of makes it seem like he could be a Dinobot. And then Mikasa and Armin were sort of in the role of Hot Rod and Cup. That's the one thing that you don't see actually happen is, because Armin does his speech and it all comes together when that general shows up. But imagine if the whole thing had just completely broken down, where all of a sudden the captain got to do his order and say open fire with all the cannons, and then Aaron transforms and just starts smashing everything in his path the way that Grimlock and the other others did when they broke down the door. Yeah,
that's an interesting comparison. I never considered that, but you're right. It's got so many parallels to that. He does say innocent, basically, and decides to feed them to the Sharktacons regardless.
Exactly, yeah, guilty or innocent, and regardless, he was going to kill them.
I think you guys mentioned Spider-Man earlier, and I brought that back up. I know for a fact there are a few things inspired by comic books in this show. There are two characters inspired by The Watchmen. I think more the film than the actual comic, but Rorschach from The Watchmen inspired Levi, and likewise Ozymandias inspired Captain Ervin. That was something the creator himself said. I did a little research on this.
Actually, you know, I wanted to go back, but before we go too far away from characters, before it, there are a few characters I really liked. I liked the Captain guy, the weird dude that Aaron meets shortly after being enlisted in, as a Titan.
General Pixis.
Yeah, I liked that guy a lot. And what was the scientist chick? Both great Angie. Characters. Yeah. The scientist chick is crazy. Yeah. In the comparisons and influences section, that way we go back forward, I just wanted to mention one thing really quick. Is, well, I don't know where the show really got a lot of its direct influences. I am really enjoying what has been influenced from it. One of the main reasons I'm happy I watched this show so far is now I have a really good appreciation for the gigantic amount of weird fan content made about it. We watched this, like, almost half-hour-long compilation of just weird GIFs and funny videos that people had made inspired by this show, and fantastic. I like what it's inspired. So I thought that was the best place to put this little quip. It's not something that it has drawn inspiration from, but what people were getting inspiration from it. So, yeah.
Just to bring this back together, some of the other influences are classical art. There are a couple pieces of art. Saturn devouring his son is a pretty big influence for the Titans, I'm fairly sure. Likewise, Goya's The Colossus almost is a spitting image of Eren Jaeger in Titan form. I'm fairly sure that the author looked a lot into classical art. In fact, I believe in an interview I saw that he said he was inspired by a horror, I don't know whether it was a manga, anime, or movie, but he was inspired by some piece of horror that had a reproduction of the Mona Lisa eating people, and I believe that may have sparked his interest in his connection of classical horror, or classical art and horror, which has come together in a really interesting way in this. Yeah. Likewise, you can probably see some kaiju in this. I mean, there's practically a 5-minute Godzilla attack on an industrial era city,
especially where the when Colossal they're fighting Titan each other. When they're fighting each other at the end.
Absolutely. It's and the fights. I know the fights are inspired by MMA because the author is apparently a fan of MMA to the point where the physique of Eren's Titan form is inspired by a certain fighter, and the physique of the Armored Titan is inspired by a few of the larger athletes, including Brock Lesnar from WWE.
Yeah, I think there's also another really big obvious reference, if you will. There's a scene where they first utilize Eren's Titan form, or one of the first times they utilize it, to block off Titans from getting in the city by putting a big boulder in front of a doorway.
Mm-hmm.
And while he's carrying it, he's straight up Atlas.
Yeah, whatever. Another influence of classical art.
It's very well done. It looks really nice, and it's obvious what it is, and it's done. It's not just pulled out of the ass. It's like there because that's part of the plot. I like it.
I'd also like to point out that while this show, I mentioned before that the setting and characters have a lot of German to them. Their architecture of the city is very German. A lot of the names are German. Even some of the ideas and a lot of the philosophy of the setting come from German thinkers. Obviously, the author has studied a lot of classical European culture with art, philosophy, and such, and man, has he done a wonderful job of bringing it all together in a very unique way.
Yeah, it just all looks really well, good. It all sounds really good. Like we've said multiple times, everything just meshes well together. There's no one piece that stands out and throws a wrench in the works, if you will. Do you want to move on to supplemental media? Because I don't know anything about it.
Can if you guys are done. Anything left to say? Alright then. I guess the first thing to mention is that there is a secondary anime. It's a comedy called Attack on Titan Junior High. There's also manga behind that, obviously. I haven't seen this myself. I've sampled it and did not get into the humor of it. I think it's great for showcasing the character personalities for a lot of the cast, and if you can't get into the characters and absolutely want more Attack on Titan, this is a great way to get the character building that you might not have gotten, because you get to see all of them showcased.
Question, how long is it?
I believe it's 26 episodes. It might be 13.
Give it a shot for an episode of this podcast at some point.
We could. That's existent. There's also other tertiary mangas. There's a manga called Before the Fall that happens, I believe, a decade or two before the events that begin the show, following a failed revolution against the government and essentially the popularization of the Titan fighting gear that we see.
I want to see that anime.
That might be good. There's also a Captain Levi prequel where it shows him joining the scouts. He's basically coerced into it by Captain Ervin. And it also shows another part of society where they had failed at building an underground bunker city.
And that's actually mentioned in the show.
Mm-hmm. He was apparently a gutter rat who lived down there and was recruited by Captain Ervin. There's another side manga that focuses more on short stories called Lost Girls. It has a story about Annie before the conclusion of season one, where she goes out on sort of a military police exercise. There's also a retcon to Mikasa and Eren's childhood, where the events that we see in the anime do happen, but not necessarily in that order. It establishes that they had known each other for a few months to a year beforehand, which kind of explains why Eren was willing to go out to such lengths to save her. Takes nothing away while adding things, which is quite good. Other little short stories. There's a lot of supplemental manga stories.
I kind of like it. It feels very... I bet you the manga feels very Western comic book-like. I don't know if manga does this as much as Western comics, but like they'll have like Spider-Man comes out and they'll have Spider-Man's spin-off comic about where he does this stuff, or another spin-off comic where like it's set in the past maybe, or hidden days from his high school years or whatever. Like,
I'm glad you mentioned that, because there are things like that. Before I get to that, I would like to mention that there's also a light novel to Before the Fall that's not just a retelling, but it's a prequel to Before the Fall, so there's a prequel to the prequel. There's also a, from my understanding, a laughably bad live-action movie. I haven't seen it myself, but to my understanding, it is a very bad movie. I have to see it myself sometime. Maybe we'll check that out in an extra video or something, maybe a mini-episode. I don't know. But, as you said, how you'd be interested to see things in the setting, there's actually, I kid you not, there's an 8-page Avengers Attack on Titan crossover comic.
I need to find this eventually. Yeah,
it was given away for free comic book day. It was originally published in some Japanese publication, and then given canon? Away in print. It's absolutely not canon. No.
I wonder if it's canon to the Marvelverse.
It is canon to nothing. It is canon only to the very, very vague and broad Marvel multiverse.
Don't question what could be canon in the Marvelverse.
Well,
Archie Comics. The entirety of Archie Comics are canon.
To my knowledge, it is a story of what happens when Titans, for some reason, come out of the ocean and start attacking and eating people in New York City. So you could see Spider-Man web up Titan and do very well against them, obviously. He's got his built-in ODM gear. You get to see Hulk smash one in the back of the head. You get to see Iron Man fly around them. Guardians of the Galaxy apparently just show
up. This all sounds a very, very official fan fiction.
Pretty much, yeah. Great. It's 8 pages. But it's also...
I have a soft spot for that type of stuff. Official fan fiction is like what I like to call it.
You might want to pick that one up then. Yeah. Another one is there's anthology comics made by Western artists and authors They're non-canon to anything, but they're set in the Attack on Titan universe. Just sort of short stories based on the Attack on Titan universe. A lot of famous artists and authors from the comic book industry took part in this. There'll be links to some videos of these in the description. I've got some videos that recap them, if nothing else. But there's some really interesting stuff. It's had quite a cultural impact, not just for people shitposting and making YouTube but it's actually
But the shitposting
affected.
Is awesome, though.
The shitposting is awesome, but it's reached the point where even the comic book industry is making official stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. I'll have to check in some of that stuff. I'm really interested in that crossover thing. I genuinely have a... that sounds like very much my thing. It's my dream to own the comic book where that Star Trek The Next Generation crosses over with X-Men. So, like, this is definitely my thing. I have a thing for crossovers.
Well, we will...
I have a thing for, like, cheesy, like I said, official fan fiction. This is a thing I want. I need this in my life. But yeah, is there anything other supplemental? There's the video game.
Yeah, there's a few video games, actually. There's a 3DS one, and there's a more polished and more popular console game. I don't want to go too much into that, but there are video games being made, and I'm fairly sure that it being a popular current IP, that they'll continue making more over time.
Is it shovelware?
No. The 3DS one might be. It looks like it's got too high production, but it doesn't look like it's bad.
I think that should be a question we always ask on this section.
Yeah.
Like, when we get talking about supplemental media and stuff, that's an important question to ask. Is it good?
I would say
is it shovelware?
The 3DS one is below par, but looks too good to be shovelware. The other game, obviously, it's not. It's a high price tag console game.
Okay.
There might be a few others out there, mobile games and such, but I didn't look too deeply into that. I think there's some weird, super short visual novel at the end of one of the Japanese Blu-rays. Hell if I know what that's about, man.
Is there anything else to talk about before we move on to final thoughts?
Nothing I can think of, but if you guys want to wedge something in, now's the time.
I have nothing else really... Yeah, I've said most of the things I want to say. How about you, Airhammer?
Not really. Like, yeah, we were talking about the crossover. A lot of people are doing crazy crossovers right now. So, yeah, if we got Avengers and Attack on Titan, we got Star Trek and X-Men, we have Mega Man and Sonic, we have Power Rangers and the Justice League. It can go on.
Yeah, crossovers are amazing. I think we should definitely do an episode of the podcast at some point.
Oh,
specifically,
there was Ninja Turtles and Batman did a crossover.
Yeah, I definitely don't know how we'll fit it in, but it's definitely something I want to talk about at some point, because crossovers are something I really love.
Well, yeah, next time on Animated Tangents.
Hey, tangents are awesome. That's okay.
Tangents are awesome.
I listen to a lot of podcasts, and some of the most amazing parts of what is being said is tangents, and this is not one of them. Anyway, let's move on to final thoughts. So what do you think?
Well, okay, yeah, I've had the least to say throughout this episode, and the show really hasn't had the biggest impact for me. It looks great, yes. There's a lot of questions that I have leading into season two, which I guess I would feel compelled to watch just to see if they're answered. But yeah, it hasn't hit me hard enough yet to where I find it amazing. I would recommend it to others, and I do want to see more of it.
I feel like at some point we should work out some kind of scaling system, how we feel of each show. But how do you feel about this one compared to the other shows we've done so far?
Well, of
obviously
the three,
I
would... Sailor Moon, I'm biased. I like Steven Universe far more than Attack on Titan at the moment. And Gravity Falls is next. Who knows where that will fit in.
But yeah, my thoughts on the show so far is I'm glad I watched it. In a lot of ways, like I said, I like being in on the YouTube poops, as Deus would put it. But like, I'm glad I watched it because it's something different and something I might not have watched otherwise. Which I feel a lot of shows that we get to on this podcast will be that way, and that's one reason I'm glad we're doing this, because it's going to force me outside of stuff that it would... Instead of just rewatching stuff I already like, or, you know, not experimenting with new types of content, it's going to force me to watch stuff I wouldn't usually venture into myself, and I'm glad for that. I enjoyed it, but I'm not a super fan. I will likely watch more, and I would recommend it to other people who might, who I think might like it, but I'm probably going to wait until and just binge watch a season at a time as they're finished up. I won't be the kind of guy that sit on the edge of seat and wait for the new episode every weekly or whatever. Yeah, I'll probably follow up. It's an okay show, or not okay show. It's a great show at what it does. It's just not one of my favorite types of shows, so I don't know if I'm going to follow it super religiously. But I will follow it.
Yeah, remember, you mentioned earlier that you haven't had a lot to say. In light of that, I would love to hear you expand on your final thoughts a bit more. What is it that makes it not grip you, but you still recommend it? Because that's such a weird neutral area. I would love to hear your thoughts explained better and expanded upon.
I guess I'm just not clicking enough with the characters, but it's part of just the overall happening of the show that keeps me intrigued. Like, we have our comparison to zombies. I am a big fan of zombie movies and The Walking Dead, so I guess it's that part that keeps me going. Like, I want to see what happens next. These characters are in some ways afterthoughts because a lot of them are just Titan fodder. You only get into depth with some of them, and there's only so many that I can really care about. Like Armin, I really don't care for the character, period. As I said at one point, I nicknamed him Little Bitch because that's all he seems to be. He's just Eren's childhood friend that grew up, and now he's just kind of there. He has that beady-eyed look. He whines a lot. He seems kind of like a coward at first, but then he grows a little bit. It's like, I care more about Mikasa than I do other characters. Eren is great, but he's so driven by his anger. I feel like I'm more in tune with some of the characters that give off those comedic moments that we've talked about.
I feel that both Airhammer and I have, like, Airhammer mentions, you know, you don't have a very big love for a lot of the characters, or you don't get attached to them as much. And I think Airhammer, Bolson, and I are very much character, like shows that are character driven, and where the characters that make focus. And this one, it does it purposely and as part of its style, but it still needs to be said, it has been said, that it's not very focused on characters. And I think that pulls a little bit away from it for both Airhammer and I. Or that's what I'm trying, it seems to I'm getting from what you're saying.
Yeah, like, the only other thing is, I feel that they could have scaled things down a lot. Like, the first season is 26 episodes, and there is so much filler in my mind that is just talk and a little bit of character development, whereas you're wanting to see a lot more action. I guess this, in turn, of course, brings back to the zombie comparison, where you will have a lot of episodes of, say, The Walking Dead, where they're going to be focusing on character development or just talking, figuring things out, doing this, doing that, and you're going to see so little action when it actually comes to the zombies. But then they're not supposed to be the main focus. The characters are. And so this is why you'll have a lot of episodes that just seem like pointless filler, and it varies from fan to fan. I think the same thing kind of happens here, where I want to see more of them fighting the Titans and maybe trying to advance their technology. Like earlier, I talked about how they are still using cannons, even though they've been fighting Titans for a century. It's like, okay, you've got these gas-propelled things that let you zip around and fly everywhere and grapple onto walls. Have you ever considered maybe creating a device that cuts? You know, that's the main thing about the Titans. You're aiming for the back of their neck.
Like I said, a lot of your questions have been
will
answered.
That is one
of them.
I'm on a tangent, but another final thought I had that I wish I'd brought up earlier is it's kind of an art thing or a visual design thing. I really like the bumpers in the show, even though I can't understand them. I wish I could. I want to see translated ones. The bumpers, where the commercial breaks are supposed to go, they have these like infographics about stuff in the world, like, oh, there's different classes of Titans, or this is how their gear works, or this is what they're protecting. Like the infographics are really neat, and an expansion upon that is like, in the second half of the first season, there's this whole big military campaign thing outside, and they're all in crews, right? They're all in like little groups of three, marching or like riding their horses along in formation, and if it like scopes out over the battle plan of how they're going to be outlaid, and every time they switch camera view to a different group, there's a little pop up in the corner that shows where they are in the formation. It's super cool. I like that,
and yeah, it fits with the military. I'm with you on that. I think the show, when it decides to give you information, does it very well. It gives you a lot of information when it's ready to. It's almost like a puzzle that puts itself together right in front of you. And you can pull even more out of that by sitting down and thinking about the elements. In response to what Airhammer said about the talking, I can get behind that. There's too many talking head segments, but at the same time, talking is really the only window of thought you get with the characters. That's the only time you get to really understand what they're thinking, because if there is nothing but action, you only really get to think about or get to know what they think about the situation at hand, and don't get to see a greater window. It's sort of a damn if you do, damn if you don't situation. I suppose if it leaves you wanting more, then that's a good fault to have.
Yeah, like, I don't mind it. It's just that there is a lot of it, and they probably could have cut out a few episodes.
Yeah, I think it could have been a 22-episode series, just if they cut out the first 2 minutes of every episode that recaps the previous.
Yeah, I was just going to bring that up. That is a little thing that bugs me, in that nearly every episode has this long recap that can last anywhere from 1 to maybe 4 minutes of the previous episode.
I don't think it's that bad. I think it's I think we put it upon ourselves by not skipping it. I think, because it adds something new, and it's meant to be there for people who have waited the last couple weeks for a new episode. I honestly don't think it's that bad. I think we brought it on ourselves by not skipping it. That's.
I tolerate it because it does show some of the most dramatic moments. If you looked away to get a drink, if someone bothered you.
Yeah. Even it's if a nice you're recap. Not waiting That's, a week. It does what it's supposed to do. I think that complaining against it is our own fault, really.
With that said, I wish there was an edit with only 20 or so episodes to cut out the extra repeated part, and I can get behind what you said about that. With that said, those 20 episodes of actual real content are absolutely superb. I would say this show is an audiovisual masterpiece. It is backed up by an excellent setting, a strong sense of mystery, a great story overall, and despite how they're not quite everyone's taste, there's still good characters. There is nothing about the show that is less than good. In fact, I would say less than very good. This is an absolute wonderful show. I would recommend it to anyone who's interested in animation at all. For nothing else, just watch the intro and study it. Jesus, it is wonderful. By the wall, this is an amazing show.
My final thought is that I like it. It looks good. It sounds good. There's a little bit of hiccups with the way music is used, with the lyrical music, but if you're into weird, gory, zombie-like military mystery last leg of humanity things, you'll like it. It fits into a lot of genres. Yeah, I could recommend it. It's not my favorite thing ever, but it's worth watching.
It's one of my favorite things. I absolutely endorse this show. I don't think there's many people who would watch this and not get something out of it.
Yeah, I've definitely got something out of it. I think it handles a lot of themes really nicely. I think it doesn't. I really like that it's not always happy and cheerful. It represents a lot of stuff realistically. So what's your final thought before we end this, Airhammer?
I'm really curious to see what happens in season 2. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah. I guess this has been Animated Indulgence Episode 3. Next episode will be Gravity Falls. I guess we'll see you next time, guys. And don't forget to have sex with the bees and the eagles.
Farewell, friends. Until next time.
Next time, everyone.